Hello everyone, welcome to another edition of J-Talk Extra Time, the J-League podcast. My name's John Steele. Of course, we haven't got that much J-League to talk about right now due to the coronavirus continuing to wreak havoc, but we'll try and entertain you for the next 30 or 40 minutes as usual. Anyway, joining me, as always, is my regular partner in crime, Stuart Smith. Stuart, hello, how are you doing?
Good evening, John. I'm doing well, thank you. Doing well. Working at home and spending a lot of time in front of my computer. So, yeah, it's going all right, I suppose.
Yeah, we're recording on the 29th of April, Stuart, the Showa Day, national holiday in Japan. Traditionally, the first of the Golden Week, week of national holidays. People tend to, travel inside Japan and internationally, and everybody takes it easy. It's not the case this year. Things are a little bit weird, and usually, probably we should say, lots of J-League as well. Usually, two or three rounds of games going on, over the next 7 or 8 days. But it definitely feels kind of almost eerie and empty this year. So but we hope everyone listening has a chance to grab some downtime and take it easy while staying safe this year. So we'll touch on the J-League sort of latest news, if you like, briefly, Stuart. There's not really a great deal to report since we convened last week. So the league's still suspended due to the coronavirus outbreak, as we mentioned. There are various kind of news reports floating around about the J-League having these different contingency plans in place when the league might get back up and running. So I've skim read articles about the J-League preparing for a restart in June, July, August. There was even one I saw today about starting in October, which is usually when the league is wrapping up. So that would be very interesting if that came to pass. Just glancing around, the Taiwanese Premier League is running again, which you sort of are worried about me because I watched the game from there over the weekend. And South Korea's K-League has announced they're going to be up and running again on May the 8th, albeit behind closed doors. So there are some kind of, positive signs that football will come back at some point. But I think it's going to be a while before we see any balls kicked in anger in Japan, certainly. What do you think? Is there anything that you've heard or read since last week to change your opinion?
No, not really. I tried to say that in my most positive voice possible, but yeah, there just hasn't been any movement, and that's not just in football circles. That's in general society in Japan. I think all over the country, we've been kind of designated in this kind of weird state of emergency that doesn't really have any teeth to it. It's just a whole series of recommendations and things like that, but because there's been no movement on that part, then there hasn't been able to be any movement from the sporting world. I think the lack of updates from not just the J-League but from the NPB and the other the Nippon Professional Baseball and the other sports leagues tells you the same thing, really, that we're just in a holding pattern. We're gonna see where this state of emergency takes us. And I think that it's scheduled to end on May 6th, but my suspicion is that it will be extended until the end of May. And so for those who put their chips down on a June start, I don't think that's going to come up. I don't think that's going to come up for you. And yeah, I think we're looking at July, to be perfectly honest with you, at the start. And I haven't listened yet, apologies to Ben and Dan, but Dan, I know, talked about the state of the finances at Sagan Tosu, which have been all over the news this week. They're in they're in a lot of financial trouble. This is the time of year when clubs release their previous year's financial statements. Gifu did theirs and kind of, I don't know how low it flew under the radar, but they made an operating loss of, I think it's 69 million yen last year, I think. And we spoke last week about Alberix Niigata, Avispa Fukuoka having poor financial results. And I think the league should be bracing itself, or supporters should be bracing themselves for more results coming like that. Although it should be noted that they are for 2019. They're not for the financial year 1920, I think, as far as I understand. But
oh, so Sagan Tosu will have turned it all around by now then?
Quite possibly. Quite possibly. And I think one thing that would make me slightly nervous if I was a Sagan Tosu fan is their partnership or naming rights with Ekimai Fudosan, who, own the naming rights to their stadium. Fudosan is Japanese for real estate, and I would be slightly suspicious of that right now. Having a real estate company involved in the stadium that that you don't own. Dan told me. Mm-hmm. Dan told me that Sagan Tosu don't own their own stadium, but they're named by a real estate company, and it's right next to the station. So hold on to your hats, Tosu fans, because it might be a slightly bumpy journey going forward, I would think. But as far as concrete news about the J League restarting, there really isn't any, I think.
No, I think it's difficult as well to know. You know, basically this year is almost like a wash for most businesses, isn't it, at this point? Yes. It's going to be very difficult with I know we're talking about 2019 financials, so we can analyze those, but I think this time next year, if we're looking at financials from 2020, it's almost going to be I've got to phrase this carefully, because it's I'm not going to mean it the way it's going to come out, but the COVID-19 situation kind of gives clubs or businesses in general not a free pass, but kind of an out. Do you know what I mean? When the numbers are really bad, they can be sort of massaged a little bit. That is not saying that clubs are actively going to do that, but it's if I was running a business, that's what I do. So I'd be pointing to the coronavirus and saying that, well, because of X, Y, and Z, that's why the numbers look so bad. I did read one other thing about it, was the J League is kind of actively pursuing its sort of credit lines with various banks, and I think that the figure that I read was like 20 billion yen, which is what the J League is looking to borrow, to try and help clubs out. So that's all anecdotal. I didn't really do any hard digging on that, but that's a lot of zeros. We like to be positive on the pod if we can. I think we can definitely say football will be back. That's the positive part, but we don't know when. And I'm starting to get a bit worried about what shape some of these clubs might be in, when football does come around again. I think if we get to September and we've had no matches, no J League matches, I think then you're heading towards the 2020 season just being written off completely, aren't you? And that's going to be a tough thing to work around. I mean, if you've got clubs, Sagan Tosu is a smaller club in J1, it's fair to say, but the J1 side, they've not been unsuccessful really, considering their size in the last decade or so. Fernando Torres obviously being there one example. So if a club like that can be in big trouble, I think that doesn't bode well for some even smaller teams lower down the leagues, does it? That's our trying to be upbeat and failing J League wrap up, Stuart. We don't want to leave the listeners too disheartened, though. Obviously, we talked about this many times, so we were scratching around for ideas of something we could do that'd be a bit more fun for the listeners this week, hopefully, and we struck upon, or to be fair, you hit upon the idea of a bit of a Room 101 theme discussion. I think anybody listening will be familiar with the concept of Room 101 from 1984. Anyone listening, who's familiar with UK TV will know the TV show Room 101 that we are basically going to copy for the next 20 or so minutes. But for anyone who's not sure, never seen the British TV show, could you give us a quick 1 minute kind of high concept elevator pitch on what Room 101 is all about?
Room 101 is the room in which you put the things you don't like in. So it's a room where you take all the kind of unfavorable opinions that you have and all the negativity that you have about a certain topic or a certain person or whatever, and you put it in Room 101, and it's just basically you stick all the stuff that you don't like in there and lock it away, and it never bothers you again.
That's a really succinct description, much better than I would have done, I think. So thanks for that. So basically, we're going to chat a little bit about things in the J League that we don't like, that we would like to banish to Room 101, were we so able. And then, we'd like the listeners to kind of tweet at us and let us know if they agree or disagree, and if we missed anything glaringly obvious after they've listened to the show. Does that sound okay? Okay, so we're not sure how many selections we've got, but we'll try and do two or three each to kind of cover a few different bases. But what would be your first, if you could put something from the J League into Room 101, what would be your first pick, Stu?
Well, I know a lot of people will probably think like running tracks around stadiums or collarbone sponsors or that kind of thing. So I'm going to try and be a little bit away from the obvious here. What I'd like to put in Room 101 is the tradition of when teams lose, that they do a lap of the field and bow in front of their fans. I don't think it's needed, and I think it causes more stress than it has to. And I don't know if it's just my personal opinion on this, or my personal take, having seen a lot of defeats at Gifu over the years, but I noticed in the last couple of years that the toll it takes on players, you've just been kind of shafted at home by Albirex Niigata, even though you missed a penalty in the final minute or whatever. You know, as a player, you know that the fans aren't going to be happy, but you still have to go there. You have to go in front of like fans that have, the majority of fans are good, right? They'll applaud you, or they'll say come on, or like gambate, or do like next time or whatever. But when you have to stand in front of the ultras, core support, whatever you want to call them, no good comes out of that. Like, the fans just get stressed, the players know they're going to get shouted at, and I've seen it on more than a few occasions where a supporter has said something to a player who's taken exception to it. I've seen it happen to even the most mild-mannered of players. Like, I know Keiji Takachi, when he was with us, he got really irate at one particular supporter who directed criticism at him. Hiroaki Namba's done it. Like Yoshinari Takagi, the goalkeeper, has even been involved in it. And it doesn't need to happen, really. You can just, like, if you've been beaten at home, and especially if it's like, if it's a really bad defeat, which again, I've seen a lot of them, you don't need to go around and bow, and you just need, like, you can just go and just clap them and like keep your, what do you call it, your social distance from the supporters. I don't think it needs to be kind of that formal. When you win, of course you want to share in it, but when you lose, I don't think it needs to be shared. I'm not sure that much good comes from it. Don't know. That's my opinion.
It's very ceremonial, isn't it?
It is. Really, it's done because it's done because it's done, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I think if you've just been beaten 5-0 at home, there's no. I'd love to ask what the players think. In fact, I've asked a few players think, and they're quite nice about it. Actually, I think the foreign players are like, yeah, we want to show that we're sorry to the supporters and whatever. But mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, I wonder what the benefit is of you going. It's like if you make a mistake at work, do you go around to the accounts section and say, oh, I'm sorry, I'll do my best next time? And then do you go to the personnel section and say, yeah, oh, I'm sorry, I won't do that again? And then after you've done those two, you have to go in front of the manager, who gives you an almighty bollocking in front of everyone else. And it's like, how do you feel after
that? I only had to do it after that one Christmas party. Yeah.
But, like, yeah, I mean, it's just... I know football's not an everyday profession, but I don't think... Yeah, I wouldn't miss it if it was gone.
I think I agree with you. And one thing that springs to mind is a very, very common criticism of players from supporters is that they don't care, or they don't care enough about whether they play well or the team wins or loses. And I think altercations of the type that you mention on the lap of honour or lap of dishonour after a drubbing, I suppose, I think it's another situation where supporters sometimes judge players like unfairly, because everybody processes these kind of feelings in different ways. So, for example, a classic one on a similar theme is like players losing their temper when they get substituted and they don't agree. And it's like, you know, some players like throw their shirt at the manager or kick a water bottle or whatever, and that shows how much they care about playing for the team, even if they're expressing themselves in the wrong way. Whereas other players accept it and they, you know, will just troop off, you know, put their coat on and sit in the dugout, or go down the tunnel to get some treatment or something. And, you know, I've heard people say like, oh, well, that, you know, player X clearly cares more than player Y because he loses his shit when he gets substituted. It's like, well, it's apples and oranges, isn't it? You're comparing two different people. So some people think like, oh, because this player ended up in a shouting match with a random supporter, he cares more about whether the team wins or loses than player Y, who ignored it. And I think it's really unfair on the players as human beings, you know, because there are not many situations where you expect everybody to behave in exactly the same way. And yeah, it would annoy me, I think, if I was a player and I was told, well, how come you didn't, you know, try and attack that person? It's like, well, because that's not my, just not the kind of person I am, sort of thing.
I remember when, Keiji Takachi did it, and anybody that's seen Keiji Takachi play will know that he's just silky smooth. He's got a left foot like an angel, and he's one of the most mild-mannered people you could ever meet. And yeah, after one defeat, yeah, he got into it with one of the supporters, who shouted some stuff at him, and Takachi gave a bit back, and I was in the media part that day, and I saw him walk past, because the media at Gifu, the mix zone is right outside the changing rooms, and Takachi was furious. He was absolutely livid. He took out his shin pads and he threw them kind of into the box. He threw his boots against the wall, and just and just when you think things can't get any worse, the drug testing people come and they said to him, you've got to come with us. And I left then, because I don't want to see what's going to happen next.
You felt uncomfortable.
Yeah, I just thought, like, yeah, I don't. I felt sorry for him. I just, like, out of everything, you just, like, what's the worst thing that could happen at that point right now? Yeah, the drug testers come and say piss into
I think it's another good example, isn't it, where being someone, not necessarily a footballer, but someone who just does their job in the public eye, you know, when, like, I have bad days and lose my shit sometimes, but I don't do it in front of, you know, 10,000 people. or watching on TV. That just made me think of, this is a bit of a deep dive into Japan, but delivery drivers get quite a rough deal here, pay-wise and conditions-wise. There was a viral video maybe a year or two ago, maybe longer, of a delivery driver just like losing his temper and like slamming all his packages like on the floor when he was trying to do something. Like, of course it's bad and it's wrong and he shouldn't have done that, but I just like, you see like a human being literally just running out of patience. It's tough to see that in public, and I think I always feel sorry when I see players go through that. The one who sticks in my mind is Yusuke Mori. He used to play at Kawasaki and then ended up at Verdi, and it would literally be, not much exaggeration, like every other week, like someone in a suit would have to be like near him when they did lap, just in case. Because yeah, he'd be like a dog with a bone. If somebody said something he didn't like, he'd be like in. If you didn't keep an eye on him, he'd be in like row 10, you know. He was one who got punished for taking off his medal, his runner-up medal at the Nabisco Cup that year when Kawasaki lost as well.
I just think it's an unnecessary kind of stress burden on the players, and I think on the fans, like, because some like when Gifu lose, notice I said when, not if. When Gifu lose, when they go to the supporters behind the goal, like the core support, like Gifu's core support is actually quite big. There's always a group of, must be 300 or so, around the back of the goal, and the reactions are really weird because the core leader just stands there in silence. He often turns his back if the team's lost. And then the people around him, some are just quiet, some don't say anything, some just stand there. But there's a group kind of either side of them that really let loose. And there are some saying, like, come on, let's do it, come on. And I remember at the end of last season, after the final game when Gifu were... I think the final home game when Gifu were obviously relegated, they lost against Corfu, and we have our kind of big group photograph with all the teams and all the cheerleaders and all the school staff and all that kind of stuff. It's supposed to be a celebratory thing, like thanks for the season. But obviously, like when Gifu were relegated, like the, you know, it's not a very conducive atmosphere for that. But it's, yeah, we got all the players and the staff and all that gathered up behind the goal. And two of the under 18 players, two of the youth team players, shared a joke. And they were they were having a laugh between themselves. And there were two or three supporters in the stands that didn't hear the joke, but just saw them laughing, and they absolutely let rip. Like, why are you laughing? You've just been fucking relegated. Oh, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, no, don't do that. That's not, it's not the time. It's not the place. It's your frustrations spilling out onto a couple of under 18 players who have nothing to do with the absolute shit show that took place on the pitch last year. You just gotta, yeah, I don't know, you just gotta know when, like, there are some people that just can't wait to let rip and things like that. So I don't think it's beneficial for anyone, to be honest. And yeah, I wouldn't be disappointed if it was gone next year, to be perfectly frank.
Fair enough.
Is it in? Because you have to judge it, right?
Oh, I see. I didn't realize. It's difficult because I'm one of these people. I find a bit of handbags amusing, even if it is between a paying customer.
Oh, it's amusing. It's amusing when it's the opposition. Because I've seen it because Kyoto Sanga did it a few years ago when they were beaten at home. They they had what was described to me as a supporter and staff meeting after the game. But it was just conducted on the sidelines with very loud voices.
Yes. A frank exchange of views.
Yes, yeah. And they came to a mutual understanding after it.
Yeah, I think it might be something that just as foreigners, we are not culturally attuned to, which I hate using that as a defense, because I think it's often deployed as like, you know, kind of just basically when somebody in Japan doesn't want to help you or doesn't want to explain it to you, they'll often be like, oh, you don't understand, or you can't understand on the same level. But I think maybe that's the ceremonial side. That might be some truth in that here. I tend to agree. I think coming from our UK background, the lap of honour is something that happens usually after the last home game of the season, isn't it? And then it lasts for about 20 minutes if you've finished in mid-table, half an hour if you've been promoted, 5 minutes or less if you've done badly. And that's it. I can remember at Stoke having players, especially from Holland for some reason, who they would do the sort of own lap of honour at the end of games. I think the supporter culture is a bit different, you know, there. But yeah, most players, I mean, if you watch a Premier League game, players are down the tunnel pretty sharpish after games. I think one other thing we should say, and the reason why I agree, I think it should go into room 101, is if I were a player and I'm losing badly, for the last 5 minutes of the game, I might already have half an eye on that lap of honour or lap of dishonour. And I think it's something, yeah, it's an unfair pressure to put on players, I think.
I think probably arguing against myself a little bit. It kind of depends what kind of defeat it is as well. Because if you've been tonked like 5 or 6-0, 7-0 in the case of Gifu against Tokushima, you probably don't need anyone else to tell you that wasn't good enough today. However, if you were 10 men and you came back from like 3-0 down to 3-2 and you just couldn't get over the line, then maybe, but I suppose it's an all or nothing situation, I think.
Yeah, in that case, I agree. Also, I've wasted a lot of time watching these things in the time that I've been in J-League stadiums, and almost, it's very rare that interesting, I mean, we've talked about a lot of interesting events here, but it's usually pretty boring, isn't it? People could go home a bit earlier if we didn't have to enjoy. So I'm one of these people where even if I'm not enjoying it, I always stay. So I've paid, so yeah, I've got to stay in. Okay, so yes, I would put that into room 101. Of course, listeners may disagree. They can get in touch with us and let us know, can't they? Yes. Yeah. Yeah. If Stuart hates Japanese culture, you can put a joke. Yeah, okay, so I think there are a few fairly obvious ones. You've already mentioned, like, running tracks in stadiums and stuff like that. So I'll try and think slightly left field, and just think about room 101 should be quite personal, shouldn't it? Nobody likes running tracks, so it's a bit of an easy to kind of low hanging fruit to pick something like that. What I'll go for is the ticket discount that you get if you buy before the day of the game that most clubs operate. So I don't know if Gifu has this system. I wonder if it's even a J-League, not rule, but guideline or recommendation. Because almost all clubs will have some kind of ticketing discount if you buy the tickets in advance. It's usually 500 yen. So until midnight, the day, or what would it be? Midnight on the day of the game? Is that right? Midnight the day before the game? Until the day of the game, if you buy a ticket, it's 500 yen cheaper than buying it on the day, which... I'm not really sure. I suppose the idea is to incentivize people to buy tickets in advance and to kind of make season tickets look a bit more attractive than buying tickets on the day. But I've always found it needlessly annoying, penalizing people who just want to walk up and see a game seems strange to me. And it's even more of an issue for me now if, you know, I have a family, wife and son. Anyone with young kids listening to this will know you sometimes make decisions 2 hours before, you know, or an hour before. And I resent now the fact that if we living in Yokohama and we decide we want to see a game 2 hours before it kicks off, we can physically get there because we live close by, but it's going to cost me an extra like 1,500 yen to do that. And we usually, you know, we're not talking about the Premier League where tickets go like hotcakes usually. The stadium's half empty or more, even with this incentivized advanced ticket system. So, yeah, I can't really see the point. I know some clubs in J1, I guess maybe Marinos, one or two others, have a dynamic pricing now. But I think the way that works is prices go up, don't they, if the demand is high. I don't think the prices ever go down. I mean, if dynamic pricing worked in the opposite direction as well, like Verdi, by 5 minutes before kickoff, Verdi would be paying me to go in. Do you know what I mean? So obviously that's a ludicrous exaggeration for comic effect, but you get my point. Like, I don't see why I should pay five. If you're going to make the tickets cheaper in advance, at least make it like 50 yen off. Or 100 yen off, 500 yen off. If you're sitting behind the goal, that's like a third of the price of the ticket. And it doesn't really do it for me. And I don't think it does it for many people. So I'm not really sure why the league persists with it, to be honest. I don't know if you've got any views.
Well, I know why they do it. Well, I suspect I know why they do it. It's to kind of formulate plans for supporters. If you know that buying a ticket cheaper and you buy it in the middle of the week, it means you're most definitely going to come to the game itself, regardless of whether it's raining or whatever. But yeah, I'm not a big fan of it, to be perfectly frank. I think it's almost the opposite of what happens elsewhere. Like hotels have to fill up their rooms so they knock the prices down. It's not and I think that I'm like you, I don't get it really. There must be a negligible kind of benefit to it. I can't think of that much benefit to the system.
I think my issue is, like, if I buy the ticket in advance, I feel like I'm being rewarded with a saving. But if I decide I want to go to before the kickoff, then I feel like I'm being punished. I totally agree with you that getting people to buy tickets early is a good thing and it helps the clubs. But I feel like there must be a more innovative or creative way of doing it than just raising the price by 500 on the day of the game. It seems like quite an inelegant solution to the problem, from my point of view. And many's the time where, you know, keep in mind we're often talking about stadiums with no cover, so you want to wait until the last possible minute because of the weather, you know. Because I don't support any of these teams. I've never ever come on the podcast and said I'll support any of these teams through thick and thin. I'm very much a fair weather supporter when it comes to the J League. I'm not sitting getting literally. I'm not getting soaking wet watching these games, especially when I'm grandfathered into zone forever. It seems I got to come watch the games like that. But yeah, and then I've even done things like wait until the last possible minute to buy the ticket, and then at 10 p.m. the day before I fall asleep and I wake up after midnight, and then oh, now I have to pay an extra 500 yen, you know, essentially because I don't want to get wet and I was tired. I don't know, it just seems like a dumb system to me, and it always has.
Put it in the room, I think. It's a financial punishment for people that kind of are unable to make decisions until the day of the game due to circumstances that are possibly beyond their control, whether family situations, work, whatever. And I put it in the room. We'll go with that.
Pleasing.
Yeah.
Okay. What's number two for you?
See, I struggled with this one actually because I did say that I had a couple off the top of my head, but it's not a J League specific one, but it does happen in the J League, and it does happen quite a lot actually. It's goalkeepers who wear black goalkeeper gloves. This is going to be very niche, so like if anyone wanted,
this is going to be a troubling deep dive into your psyche, Stu.
Well, not my psyche. I was told this by two goalkeeper coaches when I was young, I found it the same with shoes. At a weird tangent, white shoes or trainers, sneakers, whatever you want to call them, make my feet look bigger, whereas if I wear black shoes, they make my feet look smaller. It's kind of weird. I don't know if it's just me, just my hang-ups, but black gloves make people's hands look smaller, whereas white gloves give the effect of you having like massive hands. And when I was growing up, watching like goalkeepers perform, the goalkeeper of my generation was Peter Schmeichel. He wore huge whack-off white gloves. They were Ruysch, I think I've pronounced that right. They were majority white, but they had some red kind of stitching on as well. And his hands looked absolutely massive. They're ridiculous. They looked like plates. And I'm sure people noticed his hands when they were going through to take shots on goal. And I'm pretty sure they noticed when he was pointing at them or when he was shouting at defenders or things like that. And I think it's a psychological thing. And too many people now, and this is going out to the goalkeeper glove manufacturers as well, so listen up. Get your goalkeepers to wear white goalkeeper gloves. That's all. No need for these weird kind of, especially black gloves. I hate black gloves. I really, really detest them. They look bad, and they're psychologically, they're non-threatening. Whereas white gloves look big, they project power, and yeah, they get dirty easily, but wear the white gloves. That is quite possibly the most nichest hang-up you've ever heard, right? And it does annoy me. It does annoy me, and that's why I don't own any black trainers. I've got a pair of black work shoes, but I never buy black trainers because they just look bad.
So you're against like black gloves, not just in football, just in any, you know, in any context, like
just goalkeeper. Because players can wear black gloves, whatever. But they're not using their hands to be threatening. They're not using their hands to be, to defend the goal, and they're not using their hands to project strength. They're using their feet, right? So
that could be interesting, though. You know, for like marginal handball decisions. You know, as a coach, you might tell the outfield players wear black gloves because they're not VAR. Your hands will look smaller, you know, again, just extrapolating.
Trying to think. Yeah, I just think that when I was young, like I wore a pair of black gloves. They were black Adidas finger saves. They're the ones that Shea Given, for those of a certain vintage, might remember as goalkeeper for both Sunderland and Newcastle.
Not only brilliant, also quite short in stature. Yeah. He played for Stoke as well.
He played for Stoke, yeah, he did. He when he was at Newcastle, he wore Adidas finger saves, and they were gloves that had like, they're like a plastic, you know, like shin pads for your fingers. So, like it would stop your fingers from bending back. So they were quite hard to move, but they were quite firm. They're quite strong. Mm. But I wore them for like 2 or 3 games. And we were beaten convincingly in all of them, and it was most definitely the fault of the gloves. It was no fault of mine.
Oh, so you have a personal, like, you have, like, first-hand experience of this phenomenon.
My parents weren't happy that I decided to ditch a pair of rather expensive goalkeeper gloves that I would that I had begged them for, but I was just like, no, I can't wear these. And then I went to, I switched from Finger Saves to, what brand? Allsport, the German oh, yes. brand. They were white with like a pink sign on them. As soon as I put them on, I'm like, yeah, give me some of these. And I played well after that.
I'll meet you halfway on this one, Stuart. Well, my favourite goalkeeper, and this is, I don't think he's ever come up on the podcast before, my favourite current goalkeeper is Jan Oblak. And, yeah, he is a great goalkeeper, and he also looks a bit like a mate of mine, which is I find personally hilarious, even though most people don't see the resemblance, but I do. Now, I just Googled, obviously I was listening 100% to what you were saying about the black goalkeepers. I Googled Jan Oblak gloves, and he appears to wear, his glove of choice is a Puma glove, which is the palm or back of the hand section is black, and the finger portion is black and orange. So they're not completely black, but they don't contain any white. Now, I can't in all good conscience do something that would anger Jan Oblak, or my friend. Who might actually be Jan Oblak for all I know. Look, I've never seen them together. So I don't know. Jan Oblak never struck me as someone who has trouble defending his goal. So I'm not sure. He doesn't appear, just scrolling through the images here on Google, he doesn't seem to be wedded particularly to the black gloves. He does wear a variety. I don't have his stats to hand about how many, you know, shots he's saved wearing different colour gloves. So I think you're on a sticky wicket here.
I'm just Googling Schmeichel's gloves, and they're not Kasper Schmeichel, because he's he's deviated from the norm that his dad set. But most of the Peter Schmeichel ones are those kind of ruche ones. And so,
but is that just because, you know, black goalkeeper gloves weren't around at the time? Is that perhaps a fair comment? And nobody was wearing black goalkeeper gloves.
It could be, but like I said, the finger saves were the ones that I had were black and red. So, but that's when I was, how old was I? Eight. I was after my injury, so 18 or 19.
Okay. I think I can't put this into room 101 because of the Jan Oblak issue, as I've outlined. I'd like to throw this over to the listeners, though. Perhaps we could have a Twitter poll or just a bit of a vote, and people could let us know what they think. I prefer white goalkeeper gloves, but I don't have I don't have such a perhaps because I never played as a goalkeeper. Or certainly not for long. Once people saw what a liability I was. I think we're talking more about. I think what you'd really like to do is put your memories of those three specific matches into room 101, isn't it? You know, the black goalkeeper gloves could stay out. So,
I'll just leave it with this then, and I'll post this picture later on. The picture I've got up on my computer now is Peter Schmeichel in red and white ruche goalkeeper gloves, literally about to say the F word. And I'll leave it there. I rest my case. Yeah, that's what I'll do. All right, John. We're going to have to call this the last one, I think, because otherwise we'll go over time.
I think this is one we're hoping the listeners will pick up and run with. But yeah, let's do one more and then let's sign off for this week's due. Yeah, I went from having not many ideas to too many, but I think the one I'll go with to make it J2 specific. One thing I was going to go for was the presentation of Kirin Cup games on Japanese TV, which I hate. But that, again, that seems like low hanging fruit. Everybody hates it, and also I basically have given up watching those games. So yeah, I think instead what I'll go with is I think J2 and J3, there is some love that's shown to J1 that is not shown to J2 and J3. So I would like to put kind of non-J1 discrimination into Room 101. By way of illustration, it's things like I was really excited when they started the Friday night J-League initiative with the DAZN sponsorship. So, you know, they'd make a big fuss of a, you know, Friday night game, not every week, but periodically with like some special events, you know, special guests and just a bit of razzmatazz. And I always got really excited wondering when a J2 game would get selected, or even a J3 game, because sometimes there is a J3 game on a Friday night, but it's never given the Friday night J-League branding, if you like. So yeah, I don't like that kind of there's sort of unnecessary elitism there, I think. Whereas I think when it comes to like European football, it's pretty obvious that a Premier League game is more attractive than a Championship game, if you like. But in the J-League, that distinction to me is not always as clear cut. So I don't understand why we can't have some, I think a good policy will be a Friday night game every week, but just not always from J1. If they trial it and clubs hate it or fans hate it, then it can go away. That's fine. But they could give it a go. At the moment, it tends to be, it's J1 only. And even then, it's often, or this year, a lot of them were going to be enforced by kind of ACL fixtures, weren't they? And I don't like the football paper, El Golazo. It always has J1 stuff on a Monday and J2 stuff on a Wednesday. So I've always found that particularly annoying if we are going to, you know, record a pod and... Okay. Well, that can be another Room 101. You just the whole thing. There are kind of... You know, like when you're waiting to board a flight, and obviously business class people get to go on and first class people get to go on, and then people with very young children have to go on, which for a while was me and it was awesome. They kind of have a way of not rubbing it in your face. And I don't mean the passengers themselves, but the airlines, they have a kind of way of they're not exactly rubbing it in your face, but you're made aware of that. You're made aware.
It's the announcement. Yeah. It's the announcements that go like, oh, we'd really like to extend our appreciation for all our business class and first class passengers, and we'd like to invite them to board first.
Yeah. Well, I've once had an not exactly an altercation, but what did you call it? A supporter meeting?
a frank exchange of opinions, yeah.
Yeah, because I was on a flight with my wife, or we were at the gate waiting, and they, for some reason, they decided that they couldn't open the kind of standard, what do you call it, economy class check-in yet. But everybody in business class and first class and frequent flyer, Platinum Club, Copacabana, they'd all boarded like literally 10 minutes ago. And my wife was like, why can't we, you know, and I was like, can't we? And then they were like, we're waiting to see if any more first class people are not on yet. And I'm like, well, you can just let them go to the front. But like, this is ridiculous. Like you've got like, cause there's like five ground staff standing around doing nothing and 500 people waiting to get. Anyway, I'm getting off beam, but my point is, what was my point? Yeah, I think J2 and J3. Well, it's all very well, you know. I see a lot of tweets every Monday morning about like attendance figures in J2 and J3, and they obviously get pretty bad TV ratings when the games are on TV. So I might be arguing against myself a bit there, but I think J2 and J3 could be shown a bit more love. I think if you took out, what is the name of the wild haired guy? Is it Hirakata? Hirahata, yeah. So if he wasn't around, who would mention J2 and J3 in like mainstream, you know, coverage. I feel like it's not that many people. Yeah. Anyway, my point is I don't see, you know, why with the UEFA Champions League is a top club competition. Premier League is one of the best leagues quality wise. That's fine. But in Japan, I sense a kind of not exactly steely determination, but there does seem to be some kind of policy of like, let's pretend like J1 is way above the other leagues in terms of what it almost deserves in terms of exposure. And I'm not really down with that.
Yeah, I mean, all you have to do is look at the playoff system to understand that point. Yeah, I mean, I'd look a bit of a traitor if I didn't put non J1 bias or J2 discrimination.
Yes, I forced your hand a little bit there.
You did, yeah. It's a bit sneaky, actually. I feel like I've been placed with no other viable options, but you're lucky that I agree. So,
so okay, yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for your support. Yeah, it's a weird one, but I just think it's maybe one of the things that Japan media-wise has imported from other countries. But I think it's unnecessary to kind of you know, like J2 doesn't have its own proper like review show, does it? Or J3 doesn't have its own proper review show on DAZN each week. They have one for J1, or they have a preview show rather for J1. I don't know, J2 and J3.
I think they have, but it's a very short one, yeah.
All right, Stu. Well, talking of short ones, I think we had a lot of more anger, a lot more rage, pent up rage than I thought there. So, yeah, I think hopefully the listeners found that thought provoking and eye opening. And if they did, or even if they didn't, they could let us know about that on Twitter, couldn't they? Where can they abuse? Not abuse. That's not what we're going. Where can they disagree with you? Where can they have a meeting with you?
We can have a social meeting and a frank exchange of opinions at sushi_football. Where can they find you?
That's right. Yeah, you can. I only want agreement. You know, I kind of run a very tight ship on that. No, I'm only kidding. Yeah, at J2 Canto Bites as usual is where you can tweet at me or let me know what you think. And yeah, as usual, Stuart, we want to say thanks to all the listeners, especially our Patreons. That's kind of, I'm thinking about the airline chat we just had. Yeah, it's kind of sick. But you know, you guys can all listen to the pod at the same time. You don't have to wait for. That's right, isn't it? So yeah, we're not hypocrites because we say we're not. Yeah, but thanks for downloading and listening. And if you're a Patreon, thanks for that support as well. We really appreciate it. And yeah, sorry that it's legacy content again this week. Really, we're not able to review games or preview matches because there's nothing going on. But you know, I guess there are bigger things to worry about in the world just at the moment. So everyone, please stay safe. And if you're in Japan or if you're on holiday anywhere else, enjoy your Golden Week as much as possible. And yeah, we'll check in again soon and hopefully have some more interesting topics to talk about. But yeah, thanks for listening as ever, and bye for now.